watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, Free Radio Asheville, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, KWMD Kosilov Anchorage, KRBS Oroville, The Surge 96.3, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. In this second part of our series on impeachment, we look at the mafia-like nature of the Bush-Cheney administration. Behind the waving flags and patriotic rhetoric, what we have is a field day for people who walk over dead bodies for a dollar. Literally. We're going to begin with Robert Greenwald's wonderful video documentary on war profiteering, Iraq for Sale, which I've adapted for radio. It looks under the covers of the privatization of the military. For years, the public has been inundated with rhetoric of the efficiency of private industry. The question that must be asked is, efficient for whom? Iraq for Sale, the War Profiteers.
In recent years, as we have been actively engaging in war, things the government used to do is now being done by private companies.
Food, laundry, and housing were services provided within the military.
Now we're in Iraq, you still need a lot of support mechanisms, and there's just not enough military infrastructure to do this. Private contractors come in and they fill the gap.
Halliburton Reconstruction and Troop Support, $18.5 billion.
Well, I saw contractors in Iraq doing anywhere from helping fix tanks, helicopter mechanics, pretty much any job that's in the military, there's a civilian contractor right there.
There are over 100,000 private contractors working in Iraq, Kuwait, and the surrounding area.
Parsons, Engineering and Construction, $5.3 billion.
This war has been privatized to a greater extent than any other war in history.
They're part of a multi-billion dollar industry fueled by your tax dollars, an industry very much in need by the U.S. military.
DynCorp, police training, $1.9 billion.
40 cents out of every dollar Congress controls now goes to contractors.
Transatlantic traders, surveillance aircraft, $5 million.
There's more than 20,000 private military on the ground.
The second largest armed force in Iraq are private security.
They outscale the Brits or any other nation.
Blackwater, private security to guard Paul Bremer, $21 million.
Blackwater is one of the largest and most conspicuous security firms in Iraq with about 300 employees there. Blackwater is staffed largely by retired U.S. military, including former members of the Special Forces.
Scotty was told that he would be doing security for Paul Bremer, the ambassador.
Katie Helvenston Wettengill, mother of the late Scott Helvenston, Blackwater contractor.
That he would just go everywhere Paul Bremer went, and there would be usually like 3 8-hour shifts. And that was fine with Scotty, because he didn't go over there to hurt anyone. He was there to protect people. He just had an incredible way with sports. Even as a small child, he was the best swimmer on the swim team. He was amazing. First time he ran away from home, I think he was 6 months old, and somehow he'd gotten the front door open and he was in his walker. And I'm getting ready for work and he's hauling tail down this hill, heading for the playground. And it just totally stunned me. And he was like that for the rest of his life. He was always running. Scotty went into the Navy on his 17th birthday. He loved being a SEAL. As far as Scotty going to Iraq, he chose Blackwater because they had a 2-month contract, and Scotty wasn't going to have to be away from his kids very long. He needed to make some money.
Donna Zovko, mother of the late Jerry Zovko, Blackwater contractor.
My son called me, and he told me that he was going to Kuwait with Paul Bremer, the ambassador in Iraq. I still have little soldiers in a shoebox that he used to play with. Those that were his favorite toys.
Love boys.
What?
This is Jerry this time. That's my favorite picture pool. I took you that.
And Jerry always carried it with him. Always. Wherever Jerry went, he had that picture with him. That was my Jerry. Then came my Tommy, then my niece Anita, then my nephew Yuri.
Yes, everything's
then
my Lydia. Tommy and my Jerry. I love that.
Well, he was, he was the firstborn. Everything I knew about kids, I learned with him, and for him. The news came on the radio, and it said that there was an incident in Fallujah.
Breaking news story tonight. The four American civilians were ambushed and killed in Fallujah, and they're believed to be from a local company called Blackwater Security Counseling.
There are four families in this world today that are going to get knocks on the doors, and you don't want to be on either side of that door when that happens, either hearing the news or delivering the news.
Reality didn't check in. I didn't want to believe it. I still don't want to believe it, but the fact is he's not walking the earth. I need to pray for his soul. I miss him.
I was so angry. I was so unbelievably angry. And I didn't even know what had happened. But I was just angry that my son had died. The people that did this horrible thing, these Iraqi insurgents, or maybe they were just kids on the street, they were taught hatred for anyone that didn't represent what they had been taught to believe in. And I found it so hard to hate them. But when I found out what Blackwater did, that's when I started really feeling real. I don't know how to say it.
Tom Zovko, Jerry's brother.
The vehicles should have been armored, and they also should have had saws, which are heavy belt-fed machine guns, in each vehicle, which they didn't have. There were supposed to be three individuals in each car. They pulled off two guys to do, from what I was told, clerical work. So they sent them out short, two men.
Their contracts list that they were to know where they're going, and they were to know people that they're working with.
And have been there before.
And have been there before. So they.
If they had had an armored vehicle, if they had had the rear gunman, he was the one that was going to protect them.
My son is not walking the earth because people that he trusted and worked for did not care about him. It was the mighty dollar. That's all that they cared about.
They knowingly skimped on the mission. They cut corners left and right.
Shameful country, shameful Blackwater, shameful rule, Blackwater.
What happened to them while they were with this company, not the American military, this company, had responsibilities that they didn't live up to. And our family members died because of that.
The most dangerous city on earth. No rear gunner, no armored vehicles, not even a map. That's, to me, negligent homicide.
They were just numbers for them.
Just people who they can bill for.
Chris Lehane, crisis communications expert.
This is a situation that was in the front page of the news, that was leading various network broadcasts for several days, and how that company manages that challenge will really dictate the future of that company. The first thing, the first focus has to be for any company that finds itself in the type of crisis that Blackwater found itself in is, what do we need to do to preserve the financial business future of this company? This is a company whose success, economic success, is completely contingent upon funding from the U.S. government. Within the first 24 hours, Blackwater hired a D.C. lobbying firm called Alexander Strategies Group. ASG is one of those small handful of firms in 2004 that was part of the Republican conservative club. Blackwater itself, in particular its CEO and founder, Eric Prince, has longstanding ties to the conservative movement, particularly on the Christian Coalition side, had been very generous with his campaign contributions over the years. He and his family contributed over $2 million to Republican candidates and the Republican Party.
I really don't want to talk to you, okay? Thank you.
Well, I'll ask you some questions about your men with Fallujah. What happened there, sir?
Fallujah happens the last day of March. Within 24 or 48 hours after that, they're literally on the Hill meeting with some of the most powerful members of Congress who really were going to dictate what was going to happen to this company in terms of its funding. They went to John Warner, who was the chair of the Armed Services Committee on the Senate side. They went to Duncan Hunter, who was a congressman from San Diego, who is the chair of the Armed Services Committee on the House side. They met with Rick Santorum, who is chair of the Republican Senate Conference Committee, which is a very, very powerful post.
Senator Christopher Dodd, Democrat, Connecticut.
Contractors are among those who have been taken hostage. They've also suffered terribly, injuries and loss of life, the most horrific of which occurred on April 13th of this year, Madam President, when the bodies of four contractors were burned, mutilated, and hung from a bridge in Iraq. Should we step up and try and do something about that problem?
Senator John Warner, Republican, Virginia, Armed Services Committee Chairman.
We will have to have very vigorous opposition to this amendment as it is presently drawn.
The Blackwater strategy worked very, very well.
Chris Lehane.
They went to Washington. They stopped any investigations from taking place. And at the end of the day, as a result of their action, they were able to protect their business. They went out and they retained former high-ranking government officials. Kofor Black, who was a high-ranking official at the Central Intelligence Agency. Joseph Schmidt, who was the Inspector General at the Pentagon. And undoubtedly, when you go out and you retain high-ranking officials like that, they certainly are helpful in attracting new business, pursuing new business, and getting new contracts. Within a year after the Fallujah incident, they had received over $200 million in new government contracts.
Blackwater Azerbaijan contract, $57.5 million.
People in Washington who leave government and go to work in lucrative jobs for defense industry, they have connections. They have influence.
Blackwater awarded $33.4 million State Department contract.
Business boomed. They just built a brand new headquarters.
That's a big expansion.
It's a rather big expansion, but it's needed. Certainly we've left room for growth. Right, 8,000 square feet in the original building, 64,000 square feet here.
600% growth from 2001 through 2005.
The company says it can assemble hundreds of battle-ready men, a small private army at a moment's notice.
Teams of Blackwater independent contractors are deployed around the world.
$73 million Katrina contract to Blackwater. That's $243,000 per day.
Instead of mourning my son's death and the other three men, they go and they profiteer off of it. They were cutting every possible corner to make more money for them.
In Iraq, most of the men aren't getting the protection. Men over there working for Blackwater are still dying. The world really needs to know what's going on over there, and we need to stop it. There has to be accountability. Right now, they are literally getting away with murder.
Companies should not be permitted to operate in a war zone and not be held accountable.
Anthony Lagaranis, military interrogator, Abu Ghraib.
I was reading the Bible in Greek and Hebrew and studying those languages, and Hebrew sort of led naturally into Arabic. I was also interested in student loan repayment. I owed upwards of $40,000 in student loans, which the Army promised to repay. The option available to me was to get a secret clearance and become an interrogator. And I agreed that this was pre-9/11. I didn't really expect I'd have to interrogate someone, or imagined if I did, it would have been in a conventional war where things would have been very different.
Janice Karpinski, former Brigadier General Abu Ghraib.
I found out in April of 2003
by a phone call. He said, well, the good news is, congratulations, you've been selected for promotion to Brigadier General. I said, well, that's good news. What could possibly be the bad news? And he said, well, the bad news is your unit, you'll be commanding, assisting the prisons experts with the restoration of prisons for all of Iraq. And they're already deployed. And I said, well, can I go? And there was just a second of silence on the other end of the telephone. And he said, you want to go?
I received a telephone call from a Mr. Saleh. He said, can you help me?
Sharif Akil, civil rights attorney.
He said, the Americans took my money, and they hurt me very bad. And I just came from Abu Ghraib. He told me of one incident where, he was stripped nude, and they tied a rope to his penis with seven or eight other men. And then they would, these were American personnel, he's telling me, and they would push one man, and all of them would fall, and they'd be joking and laughing and mocking him. I would ask him, who was doing this to you, Mr. Saleh? And he would say, well, there were two types of people. One was dressed some type of military personnel wearing the army. And then the other type would be in civilian clothing. I go, what do you mean civilian clothing? He goes, like normal pants, like any normal pants and a normal shirt. So that's the first time when it struck me that there's another element being involved here in Abu Ghraib, another type of person there.
Hassan al-Awawi, Abu Ghraib detainee. On Tuesday, the day I was arrested, I went to my work in Haswa. I'm an electrical engineer. I was transported to Abu Ghraib prison on January 1st, 2004. There was a person wearing civilian clothes and giving orders. I think he belonged to the private companies. They put me back in the cell, cuffed my hands again, and ripped my clothes off in a savage way. One of their strategies is to tie a rope around the penis and to cut off the circulation. What is the purpose of this? What is the purpose of the injection they gave me so that to this day I can't have any more children? Why is the military using private companies to interrogate detainees? These two companies, for certain, are Titan and CACI.
When I saw the photographs for the first time, and I said to the commander of the Criminal Investigation Division, who was showing them to me,
Janice Karpinski,
I said, why are the translators around the prisoners? Why are the translators in the cell block? And he said, ma'am, those aren't translators. Those are khaki interrogators.
Pratap Chatterjee, Executive Director, Corp Watch.
Khaki was hired by the Department of Interior out of a little town in Arizona called Sierra Vista, and they were hired to do database work. And that contract, which was sort of a blanket contract that allowed them to do a whole bunch of different things, was used to do interrogation in Abu Ghraib. So what ostensibly was a contract to do clerical work or IT work turned out to be getting information not from a computer but from human beings in a notorious prison in Iraq. At the time of the scandals in the spring of 2004, roughly 50% of the interrogators were private contractors.
Khaki, contract U.S. Army Intelligence Services, $60
million. This amendment, Madam President, attempts to address what I believe is a very legitimate and serious concern that have come to light in recent days with respect to the use of or misuse of contractors in the treatment of detainees in Iraq. Quite simply, Madam President, this amendment would prohibit the use of contractors in interrogations of prisoners and in offensive military operations.
Senator Carl Levin, Armed Services Committee.
It just seems to me abundantly clear that we cannot hire private contractors to perform a function as inherently governmental, inherently sensitive, indeed inherently explosive, and for which there must be accountability, as is the interrogation of prisoners.
Corporations exist to make a profit, and when they're hired to do jobs, whether it's the provision of water or the, you know, interrogation of prisoners, their job is to get as much work as possible, make as much profit as possible. Now, that doesn't work in the field of intelligence, period.
You do not put personnel who do not have allegiance and 100% loyalty to America, you do not put them in sensitive key government activities like military intelligence gathering.
It creates a conflict, too, because we were uncertain.
Anthony Lagaranis.
You know, we knew what our chain of command was. That was very clear, and we were forced to memorize it and follow it. But what's the khaki chain of command?
Al-Haj Ali, Abu Ghraib detainee. Because of these companies, these prisons have become a training grounds for torture. I was surprised by my arrest. And the next day, I was transported to Abu Ghraib. They took the bag off my head. I found myself in front of military men, interrogators, a group of about 8 or 10. They urinated at me. They put their weapons on my private parts, in addition to the beating. I could hear people screaming for help from beating, torture, the barking of dogs. Anonymous interrogator at Abu Ghraib.
There was a wink and a nod approach. We have these rules. You're going to follow them, but we're not going to spend that much time making sure that you're going to follow them. And if I don't know about what's going on, then I can, have plausible deniability.
The contractor is safely in an office in the United States somewhere. So no direct supervision. And to just simply say, well, I guess they got out of control. I don't know where they were taking their instructions from. It seems to excuse all of them.
I have reproduced an excerpt from the job posting as it was reprinted in the Washington Post on May 10th on the poster here behind me. And let me read it for you. It says, under minimal supervision, will assist, and goes on. Key words, under minimal supervision.
In 2003, the Pentagon essentially panicked.
Mark Benjamin, JournalistSalon.com.
A very desperate Secretary of Defense did whatever he had to do very, very quickly to try to get more intelligence. If that meant running out and hiring a bunch of contractors who didn't know what they were doing and putting them wrongly into the chain of command of military intelligence, that's what they did. They were desperate.
J.P. London, CEO Khaki. Income from Khaki in 2004. $22,249,253.
The contracting business in Iraq is very, very lucrative.
Anthony Lagaranis.
There was so much money being given away over there to contractors. I mean, there were jobs that didn't even need to be there. We'd go into the tent to use our internet, and the woman who would put my name down to assign me to a computer would be a civilian contractor who was making six figures to be over there. Why is she there? Why are we paying this woman to do this?
Joshua Castile, military interrogator, Abu Ghraib.
They threw so much money at these people, they can't refuse. I mean, if you're a mechanic, you're making like $20,000 or $30,000, someone offers you $100,000 a year tax-free to go to Iraq, and that's hard. I think that's really hard to refuse.
They would very often sit down with soldiers, particularly from Reserve or National Guard, and say, hey, man, you know, what are you making, $3,000 a month over here? You know, I make that in a week.
You would talk about how, you know, in 8 more months, I'm going to be out of here and I'm going to be making $140,000.
It certainly affected retention because I don't know why any military person would reenlist to do the same job when they could get out of the military and make, you know, six times the money and do the same job.
There was a little phrase that we threw around, food for freedom, that if you wanted to get paid more, you should start eating more so that you'd get booted out for being overweight. And it's an honorable discharge, and it would boost your pay, you know, your net worth by about 5 times if you were to do such a thing. And it worked.
An anonymous detainee. The American forces came at 11:30 p.m. and they took me away. My son started screaming, "That's my mother." An American dragged me by the hand, screaming at me like this, "Go, go." He said, "If you don't confess about the terrorists you're working with, I'll send you to a place where they'll rape you."
I was getting really angry, I mean, especially because I knew that a lot of these prisoners that I saw with these injuries from abuse and torture really hadn't done anything. They weren't part of the insurgency. They were just picked up for no reason at all.
We were interrogating taxi drivers and, you know, like pizza delivery guys. It was just, you know, we called them Average Ahmed.
Using methods such as torture and also using people who are not qualified to do this job has resulted in bad information and therefore problems for national security and for the soldiers, because you're getting information that's no good.
Marwan Mawiri, Titan linguist, Kirkuk Air Base, Iraq.
In a lot of areas where you start noticing a lot of, you know, a lot of hostility against American soldiers, it's not because the soldiers are doing a lot of wrong things. It's because sometimes maybe the communication that has been transmitted to them has been transmitted to them wrongly and professionally and serving someone else's interest. These are Titan linguists. They were hired by Titan.
Titan has long-standing contracts providing critical information technology and support services for some of our nation's most valuable defense assets. Under a contract with the U.S. Army's Intelligence and Security Command, Titan has over 4,000 linguists that provide invaluable mission-critical services.
Titan is the company that provides the linguists and continues to provide the linguists throughout Iraq. They're the biggest provider in this business.
Titan, contract military services, $2 billion.
They were so desperate to get people to fill these positions as translators that they were just hiring anybody that approached somebody and obviously had command of the English language in addition to the Arabic language or Farsi or whatever it may have been.
There was people who maybe spoke the language, but it was broken, but could not read it or write it. And I'm talking about English. And they were hired. They were never given a test. Nobody was given a test. I was never given a test. The test I was given was a phone conversation for a minute. Military trusted us. Military trusted Titan. Titan came and said, "Here's a linguist that we have hired. We have trained, tested, we put our trust in, he passed a security clearance, or he got some kind of a clearance. You should trust him in everything he does, everything he say."
I did work closely with Titan all year long while I was in Iraq, and I can say that a lot of the translators weren't trained at all. I don't know what kind of training they received, but they were terrible at it.
There was no managers, there was no supervision, there was no training, there was no follow-up. There was whatsoever a system of evaluation of what linguists are doing or how, what they're doing, even a system of if these linguists really translating or doing, or really are they translating or giving their opinion. Titan made the big bucks and hired the most incompetent people most of the time, did not follow up with them, did not really know what they were doing. Probably as a result, a lot of people got hurt, a lot of people got killed, American lives got lost, because someone wants to make money and wants to have a fat check in his pocket.
Here you have the MPs who engaged and participated in horrific conduct are being held accountable for their actions. Why aren't the U.S. contractors, the civilian corporate personnel, why aren't they being held accountable for their actions?
Alan Grayson, Grayson and Kubley, PC.
If you are a U.S. soldier and you hurt an Iraqi civilian and that becomes known, you will be court-martialed. But if you are a U.S. contractor and you kill an Iraqi civilian and that becomes known, you will be sent home. And then you can come back the following week and you can work for a different contractor.
So here we have the two ringleaders of abuse at Abu Ghraib very explicitly saying, in many cases, what was happening was they were being ordered to abuse these detainees by civilian contractors. These guys are in prison for 18 years total between the two of them, and there's no contractors in prison.
My question is in regards to private military contractors. The Uniform Code of Military Justice does not apply to these contractors in Iraq. I asked your Secretary of Defense a couple months ago what law governs their actions. Mr.
I was going to ask him. Go ahead. Help.
Well,
I pick up the phone and say, Mr. Secretary, I got an interesting question. This is what delegation, I don't mean to be dodging the question, although it's kind of convenient in this case, but never. I really will. I'm going to call the Secretary and say, you brought up a very valid question, and what are we doing about it? That's how I work. Thanks. Yes, ma'am.
Are any of these allegations being investigated?
There, my recollection is, and I think it's okay to say this, is that the investigations are ongoing.
Yes, sir.
And that time will tell.
Somehow these contractors have leveraged power in Washington, and the government feels like they want to protect these people. They want to protect the security of these contracts, and they want to protect them from prosecution.
Most of the managers and most of the people we dealt with working for Titan were ex-military officers, high-ranking officers.
All major military contractors have a board of directors and a senior management that is composed of senior retired military personnel, and this allows them to be able to go get contracts.
Washington is a phenomenally incestuous place. Retired senior officers, Capitol Hill staffers, and defense industry. You know, the usual suspects come back again and again.
Massey Rich, Center for Responsive Politics.
Top recipients of money from Halliburton, Titan, Cockey, and Blackwater are the two chairmen of the committees in Congress and the House of Representatives that oversee military matters and spending.
The major corporations, these cartel and monopoly corporations, they've figured out how to legally buy influence.
Gene Ray, CEO, Titan Corporation. Income from Titan, 2004 and 2005. $47,212,415.
I would echo the words of Pope John Paul II. Profit by itself is not a sufficient motivation for business endeavors. You're operating in the realm of greed. You're not operating in the realm of morality.
Aiden Delgado, SPC Army Reserve, Nasiriyah and Abu Ghraib.
I went to Iraq and I came back. What was so heartbreaking was that I found that we weren't always the good guys, and it was very disillusioning for me, because I'd grown up with this like dream of America, what America was. And when I saw that dream at Abu Ghraib and what it had become, I felt heartbroken. I felt like I didn't know what it was to be an American, because I saw what I had thought America was destroyed and disgraced.
When they went into Iraq, a subsidiary of Halliburton, which is KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, was on the scene immediately. They were logistics people, they were mechanics, and they were also contracted to begin the process of setting up shower points, laundry facilities, mess halls, dining facilities, really searching for any opportunity to take on what would be traditionally military roles.
Doug Brooks, President, IPOA.
When you use these contractors, you gain a lot of efficiencies. You gain a lot of expertise and specializations.
It was devastating because they took over my job. I ended up doing nothing.
David Mann, Specialist, U.S. Army.
We had to train these KBR contractors how to fix these radios. We had to walk them through all the basic steps. But when I could be actively becoming a better soldier and becoming more proficient in my job, instead I'm going to sit up on guard duty to wait around while KBR contractors are doing the job that I had to train them to do. Across the board, people lost their jobs. Quartermaster companies, mechanic, any logistics soldiers were involved with, their jobs were outsourced to KBR.
If you don't know KBR,
you'd have never been to Iraq.
Jeff Miller, Sergeant, Army National Guard.
Because KBR is everywhere in Iraq.
You have hundreds, if not thousands, of these trucks driving north and south on these roads every day, bringing supplies to other military bases. Most of the people who were driving for Kellogg Brown en route were foreign workers. They were from Pakistan and Nepal, India. Sometimes there would be Americans driving the trucks, U.S. civilians.
Ed Sanchez, KBR Halliburton, former truck driver.
I heard about the job through another truck driver friend in Calexico, California. We were sitting there waiting for a load, and he told me this was his last load, and he was going overseas. From there, you know, I sent my resume in. I thought I was really going to be doing a lot of reconstruction in Iraq as far as, well, I could see me hauling fuel maybe to a place that had loaders and dozers, you know. We never went to go be in a battle or fight a fight. We went to take care of our families and make some money to reconstruct Iraq.
April Johnson, wife of the late Tony Johnson.
Tony and I met in 79 at a Halloween party. It was kind of a blind meeting, and we're married less than a year later. His brother was in the Navy, and so he always wished that he had done something like that, but he's just a good old boy.
He thought it was such a great cause to go and help rebuild, and got a job with Halliburton, and he was going to go drive a truck in Iraq. Within a month, he was there.
Holly Hewlett, wife of the late Steve Hewlett.
I was 15 when I met Steve, first time. And a good friend of ours introduced us at a fair they had, and we hit it off. He got out of the fiberglass business in Michigan and eventually ended up truck driving. Steve decided to go over there to get us financially set for not only retirement, but to, you know, help three kids go through college. He would take on anything if he thought that it would benefit his family. He wasn't military. He was non-combatant. He was a driver. He went over there to help rebuild Iraq. And that's what he wanted to do.
April 9th, 2004, Good Friday.
When I woke up early that morning, it was about, I'd say about 4:30 a.m.
Ed Sanchez.
We had to be out by our trucks by 7 a.m. And we already knew what we were going on our mission. We were told at 7 p.m. the night before on the 8th of April. The first things we do was very normal. It was just routine behaviors. Just go ahead and do a pre-check. Go ahead and preventive maintenance and check your oil and check your air in your tires and your fuel tank. And
the soldier that was sketching a map with his boot in the gravel next to his vehicle, well, some of us saw part of it and some of us didn't.
Well, nobody ever told us why, and nobody told us what was going on, and they said the roads were red, and I wasn't sure what red meant.
We left the post nearing 11 o'clock, 10:40, 11 o'clock in the morning in there somewhere, and headed on our way to Baghdad.
We're going down the road, and we got pretty close to the, I believe, the Abu Ghraib prison, and all of a sudden, the traffic, there's no traffic.
Bill Peterson, KBR Halliburton, former truck driver.
And right about then, I mean, bullets came from everywhere.
It sounded like we were in a hailstorm. It was like when you were a kid, we used to make popcorn in a pressure cooker. The temperature comes up and begins to pop.
They were coming through my doors, they were hitting my tanker, they were hitting my windshield, they were coming in through hitting the engine. You could hear them come in through one door, hit the other door where they lodged in, and I mean, they're just coming in everywhere.
And then it reached a crescendo and just seemed like it never stopped after that.
And then I could hear the men crying on the radio, yelling out for help. I'm burning, help me, please don't let me die in Iraq.
Truck behind me, that his trailer caught fire and he overturned and was trapped inside the truck and burned up.
I heard one yelling and screaming and until he stopped.
Friends that I'd promised before that, you know, if they broke down or something happened, I wouldn't leave them. I hear them screaming, I'm hit, help me, please, I don't want to die here.
I was completely saturated with blood, you know, and my pants were soaked with blood, my shirt was soaked with blood.
It was just absolutely just sheer terror. Just absolutely, positively horrifying. And I still have that shaky sort of thing in me. It's like sitting here right now, it's like I'm still there.
The mutilated bodies of four people were found west of Baghdad near an area where a U.S. fuel convoy was attacked on Friday. After that attack, seven Americans were reported missing, including contractors working for Halliburton, a company that supplies fuel and other supplies to U.S. troops. The families were notified today of the discovery. Halliburton did release a statement saying, quote, "We at Halliburton are saddened to learn of these deaths and are working with..."
Saturday, April 10th, Monday after I got the first phone call from Halliburton KBR.
The Hewlett family.
Steve, when you get back to base, please call me. I got a call yesterday saying that you are missing after heavy fighting and more attacks. You and nine others.
And where did these rocks fall again? I forgot. Dad told us, but I don't remember. Like shale?
I'm not sure.
I just turned 50, and it's hard to have to, you know, reinvent yourself like you're a teenager again. And all your dreams go out the tube. So, he was definitely below my life.
He firmly believed that KBR and Halliburton were going to keep him safe. I mean, he truly did. He was very positive about that. Right up to the end, he believed he would be safe.
Kim and April Johnson.
He wasn't much of a writer, that's for sure. His journal's empty.
My dad had just told me he was going to work for Halliburton, how big they were and how they were there to help rebuild.
Somebody knew that they sent these wonderful men out there. How can they do that? These men went to do the right thing. So, bottom line, they were totally taken advantage of.
Well, I trusted the company. I trusted them. This is a Fortune 500 company. I just don't believe they would send me down a road that was closed or was going to have hostile activity for sure. That didn't even cross my mind.
And U.S. forces here are saying openly they're braced for more terror attacks, more bombs.
We had a significant anniversary, the fall of Baghdad. We had a Christian holiday, and they converged to create what was an obvious day of danger.
Scott Allen, Cruz, Scott, Henderson, and Allen, LLP.
Halliburton and KBR had news from multiple sources, including multiple sources in the military, that the roads that day were under active combat operations and were black, closed, and or red. No civilians.
They were sitting ducks out there in military trucks on that day.
They told us we couldn't wear camouflage or anything that made us look like military. The point was clear that we were not soldiers and we were not to behave like soldiers.
He couldn't even wear a camouflage shirt on base, let alone driving a military fuel truck out in, you know, the desert where there was a war around him.
Why would they send this convoy in camouflage trucks down that road in the middle of battle?
It's about contracts, I believe, fulfilling a contract and replacing us if we died. There's a lot of different contracts being offered out there, and Kellogg Brown and Root wants most of them. If they could have them all, they would take them all. And they wanted to continue doing business with the Army, whatever the risks were.
was nothing but the money. There's no duty, honor, country among anyone at Halliburton KBR.
Halliburton KBR, some of these other firms over there are staying over there and continuing to make profits, big money, and people are just at the cost of human life.
Their contract with the Army provided them literally billions of dollars of revenue every year, that the contract profit and the contract profit that they made became more important than the lives of the men that they hired.
I think we're talking about what's right and the fact that you sacrificed our loved ones, for your profit.
KBR kill, bag, and replace people. They try to do it with us, and they killed my friends, as far as I'm concerned, and they try to kill me. I know they know.
This is a case about Halliburton and KBR trying to make a profit at time of war and using civilians in an improper fashion.
Halliburton is in charge of seeing that these men and their employees are safe. Sent these men out on April 9th and knew that there was more than a good chance that they would be killed.
When people talk about, oh, they gave their lives or this thing, and I can assure you that they did not. They were stolen from them. They were screaming and didn't want to go. And there wasn't anything greater, glorious about the whole obscene ordeal. They didn't die. They didn't pass away. They were murdered.
KBR got billions of dollars worth of contracts in Iraq without a bidding.
Halliburton got the government contract without competitive bidding.
In the case of Halliburton, most of the contracts they've received have been sole source contracts, which means they're either given the contract, it's just offered to them, or they're the only people that bid on it.
Keith Ashdown, Taxpayers for Common Sense.
A lot of federal officials will defend this, saying that this is the only company that can do the work.
Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel, retired.
Conservatives, especially, who favor a free market system, should be outraged about the degenerate state of the lack of competition in the defense industry.
Bunnentine Greenhouse, a top contracting officer at the Army Corps of Engineers, alleges favoritism and rule-breaking.
I walked into a process that was corrupt, that was geared toward preferential treatment to KBR. KBR was pre-selected. The duration of the contract was predetermined. Most blatant abuse that I had experienced in my contracting career.
The American way is competition, and I cannot sufficiently stress that in defense industry, when it comes to the big programs, there's not competition. It's monopoly and cartel behavior. It is corrupt, it is corrupting, it is corrosive to our national defense.
When we showed up, there's nothing there. Our customer is a private coming off patrol who wants midnight chow, and we're there for him.
We're doing stuff that you'll never read about in the papers.
Everyone had to make a big adjustment over there. I helped with that.
We got 80,000 troops out of the sand in 3 months. It was awesome.
I'm Ian Dolan.
Angela Stevens.
Kirk Hansen. My name is Jay Patterson, and I'm proud to work for Halliburton.
My name's Ben Carter, and within the first week of being in Iraq, I knew that wasn't going to be the company that I wanted to be with.
Former KBR Halliburton water purification specialist.
Halliburton was hired to provide clean, safe cooking, cleaning, shower water for the military. One of Halliburton's employees saw something wiggling in the water in his toilet bowl. So I went and tested the water in our water storage tanks. There was no chlorine in them, none. The water we showered in every single day was extremely contaminated. And when I talk about contaminated water, I'm saying malaria, typhus, Giardia, Cryptosporidium. I mean, the list is really, really long.
Halliburton is accused by its own employees of exposing troops to contaminated water in Iraq.
They were only concerned with making their profit and didn't care how it may affect the troops. Of the 67 water treatment plants that Halliburton run, 63 of them weren't providing safe water. And the Marines are showering in it every single day. Sorry. I was there to help them. There's a lot of soldiers over there. They might come home without a bullet wound, but there's a lot of them that are going to come home with pathogens in their blood because of Halliburton. And they don't even know to get tested for it unless somebody tells them. And I'm sure Halliburton is not going to be the company to tell them.
When I joined Halliburton, I knew I was going to work on some big things. We put out a few fires at work. Once ran into a small challenge of getting some supplies to our troops. But the biggest thing? Serving our troops good old American food. Great feel just a little closer to home.
How can you go to the chow hall? How much time you spend online?
At least.
An hour. An hour for food?
An hour in the sandstorm for food?
Tell me about that line over there. What line am I looking at right now?
That line is for the chow hall, where you eat.
Several times, dining halls were attacked. All it takes is one Iraqi that's an insurgent, and because they knew what times we were going to eat every day, they knew when to expect to hit. And that happens because KBR won't go to a 24-hour feeding schedule where they just always have food ready. They won't do it because it saves them money. Because they get paid by how many soldiers they feed, not by how many soldiers they save.
Feeding the troops. The Pentagon has found some serious problems with Halliburton's work on that contract as well.
Pentagon auditors found that a Halliburton contract to provide food and housing for American troops had a staggering $1.8 billion in unsupported costs.
It was all a scam. Halliburton was charging $45 for a six-pack can of like Coke or Pepsi that they give us and the military free in the mess hall.
Now, these sodas were made right there in the desert. It's not as if they were brought over from the United States.
Marie DeYoung, former KBR Halliburton contract administrator.
These sodas were made with Arabic wraps, you know, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, whatever, right there in the desert. So it's not as if they had an exorbitant transportation rate.
They had the little mobile units that we had to put our clothes in, like a net duffel bag.
Shane Ratliff, former KBR Halliburton truck driver.
Halliburton charged government $100 for every bag of clothes they washed.
Whenever we got our laundry back, it felt worse than when we turned it in.
Jeff Millard, Sergeant, U.S. Army National Guard.
Everything was still grimy. I stopped taking my laundry into KBR, and instead, I was washing it in the sink. And I was told by my chain of command that I was not allowed to wash my laundry on my own. I had to take it to KBR to have it washed, even though we all knew that they were doing a horrible job because they get $99 a bag for a bag of laundry that I could do at home for $3.
The legal way of stealing from the government or taxpayers' money.
The Pentagon audit released last night that found the company is overcharging taxpayers.
Halliburton Company billed taxpayers for its contract work in Iraq.
It is your money that's being used.
These contracts are managed under a system called Cost Plus, which is the opposite of trying to save money. It guarantees that everything that you buy will be paid back and reimbursed if it's seen as justified, and you'll be given a profit in addition.
A Cost Plus arrangement that critics say leaves little incentive to save. The more taxpayer dollars Halliburton spends, the more Halliburton makes.
Cost Plus encourages you to run up the cost of a program because you are going to get a percentage of the end result. And so there's no incentive to stay at Motel 6. Stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Qatar, folks.
The place that they chose for orientation in Kuwait was a huge resort set right on the ocean. Had, I think, 3 swimming pools.
So it was better than the Wyndham in Texas or the Ritz. It was fancied up.
Marble floors, mahogany woodwork. It was just beautiful.
They had sea-doos, jet skis they could use.
You could go and rent wave runners and go out and play in the water.
We were renting wave runners, and we got paid by the hour to do it. I was told this, don't question it, enjoy it.
Several government agencies are currently investigating if Halliburton overcharged for work already completed in Iraq.
They had 5-star meals catered in every day.
It was so lavish. Rows of vegetable platters, beef platters, fish platters.
It's a cost-plus contract. KBR looked at it, the more money we spend, that's more money we get in our pockets.
We had it made over there compared to the military. I mean, those guys were living in tents, and we had air-conditioned private hooches.
Kelly Daugherty, Sergeant, Colorado Army National Guard.
The tents that we were staying in were completely moldy, and everybody was getting sick with respiratory infections. They're getting paid millions of dollars. Why can't they even give us a tent that doesn't make us sick to live in it?
The soldiers are sleeping on these little cots out in the middle of the desert. While these KBR executives are driving these $40,000 vehicles.
They and their secretaries are driving at least a $30,000 to $40,000 vehicle. This secretary lives in this complex, eats her meals in this complex, has her laundry delivered to her, has no reason to go anywhere at any time, but has a brand new top-of-the-line Ford or Chevy pickup with everything imaginable on it that you could put on it.
Chrome rims and leather interior and CD players and all these extra amenities that, you know, you don't really need in wartime.
Why do they need an H2 Hummer? Why do they have Cadillac Escalades in Iraq for Halliburton managers? What is the purpose?
Henry Bunting, former KBR Halliburton procurement specialist.
One invoice that I saw was for about $7,000 for 1 month for a SUV on a lease. It was a 3-year contract. Comes up to roughly $250,000. A vehicle that you and I could purchase at the local dealership for probably top of the line $45,000. And the taxpayer paid $250,000 and never did own the vehicle.
They got the wrong equipment, ordered the wrong stuff, computers still in boxes, new vehicles. They'd push them out in what they called burn pits. And they just set it on fire, claim it as a loss, get more money for the right equipment or the right stuff they needed.
Why would you need to order somebody else's wrong equipment just because somebody pays you to do it? And you burn it and destroy it.
You got brand new trucks over there. And there's not even oil filters. So when the motor blows, what do? Buy a new truck and build the government.
$75,000 truck. They wouldn't even have a spare tire to feed it. And we had to blow it up. And they didn't care Halliburton did because the government's paying for it.